gifted for who we are, that I think that capacity for intimacy comes with our life. It comes at our birth as a part of who we are. As a baby, as a small child, we are open, we are receptive, we are eager, we are able, we have the capacity to both give and to receive love. So if we find ourselves sometime during our life without that, or with maybe a smaller amount of that capacity, then I feel like something has happened to us. And that if we need to work at it, we can get back to that natural gift that we have. I think humans are meant to be connected with each other, and they're meant to be connected with God. I don't think, Paul Simon, I'm a rock, I'm an island. Do you remember that song? Or am I dating myself to say how long ago that song was? I think if people choose that, it's maybe because something's happened that has kept that capacity for connectedness, kept it from happening. There's different kinds of intimacy. There's an intellectual intimacy. There is emotional intimacy, and that's the one I think that mostly that we're concerned about. Intellectual intimacy, could you give me an idea of what you think that might be? What would two people who are connected on an intellectual level, can you think of an example of that?
Your cohorts.
Right, at work possibly, your cohorts. Maybe just a friend that you have that shares some of the same interests. Maybe you both like archaeology, or you both like to discuss a kind of history. So the intellect, the mind, has a connection, and you have a strong bond around that. Emotional intimacy, I think we'll just stop in terms of talking about that because we're going to do a lot more of that. Physical intimacy, I think at Holden or in a dorm room or in a place where you're living in the same spot, you develop a kind of physical intimacy. You get acquainted with each other's clothes and how they live and what their bodies look like coming out of the shower and stuff like that, a kind of physical intimacy that happens because of sharing the same space. And none of these mean exactly the same as the other. They're all different kinds of intimacy. Another is sexual intimacy. And sexual intimacy can take place, as you probably know, without people even knowing each other's names. But I think that's often what when we hear the word intimacy, we often think of sexual intimacy. That's one kind of intimacy. And of course, sexual intimacy can be more than people having sex without knowing each other's names. I don't want to limit it to that. But sexual intimacy does not guarantee emotional intimacy. And that's the point I want to make. It enhances it under the right circumstances, but it is not the same. And there's a kind of spiritual intimacy as another type of intimacy. And that would be the intimacy we share with God and with other people who may share our spiritual quest and be open to our talking and our dialogue and our wonderings and our growth. In addition then to these kinds of intimacy, there are levels of intimacy. I would say maybe the most common and the least threatening kind of intimacy would be like an acquaintance. Can you think of what would be another step moving from the least amount of intimacy to the strongest and most deep kind of intimacy, which we would consider a committed marriage relationship? What are the other steps along the way in intimacy between an acquaintance and between committed married partners? What are some other words that you would use?
Friends.
Friends, good.
Relatives.
Men have buddies where they share activities.
Okay, and that's kind of a sports or leisure intimacy, which is really another kind of intimacy too. The buddies, chums, sports friends. Did you?
Like the girlfriend, boyfriend, you start dating.
Okay, a girlfriend, boyfriend, dating kind of relationship, which
working,
is, okay, go ahead.
Working peer.
Okay.
Risking
others?
Yourself to share with someone else.
Could you start it again?
Risking yourself to share with someone else.
Okay, so an intimacy where you are beginning to risk sharing yourself with somebody else, which would be past the acquaintance and possibly past the work and the sports buddy. And that's where you get into a closer closer kind of intimacy, like a friend, or dating, or moving toward a much deeper kind of relationship. What I want to say that I think I forgot to say is that in talking about intimacy, I'm not talking just about marriage or that kind of a committed relationship. There's a lot we could say about that, but I'm talking about a broader aspect of life, because you cannot get all of your intimacy needs met with one person. Or if you try, it might work for a while, but it's pretty shaky, because you're a broad kind of person. You're a rounded kind of person. And another person will not be able to hook up on all the different levels that you have. Nor would you want the marriage to be so unsupported to not have relationships with other people. So we will be talking a little bit about the marriage relationship, but I'm not going to limit it to that, because I want us to think of our capacity to be intimate with lots of different kinds of people and in other ways to meet that closeness need that we have. Okay, let's look at some definitions of intimacy, of how people talk about it. Harriet Lerner has written The Dance of Anger, and I don't know if any of you may have read it now. She's written a book called The Dance of Intimacy. Someone shaking your head. Okay. Her definition is, we can be who we are in a relationship, and we can allow the other to do the same. And she supports that with 3 points. One, neither party sacrifices or betrays their self. Two, each party expresses strength, vulnerability, weakness, competence in a balanced way. The point is that each of them can at times be falling apart, and each of them can at times be strong. There's another book called Intimate Partners by Maggie Scarf. And she says sometimes in a marriage or in a relationship with close friends, it looks like one person looked through all the list of the ways to be human, and they said, well, I'm going to be that one, and that one, and that one, and that one, and you can be this one, and this one, and this one, and this one. And she says that what happens then is one person in the relationship overfunctions, and another person underfunctions. Or they get stuck in roles, like the man who gets stuck in always being the strong one, who can handle any crisis and will never show any emotion of confusion or doubt or sadness. And then the woman gets stuck in the other side of it, where she's the one that's falling apart and showing all the emotion. She is showing all the emotion for two people. He's showing all the strength for two people. Well, both Maggie Scarf, who wrote that book, and Harriet said that that is not the way an intimate relationship works the best. It's better when the two people each have the opportunity to be all the ways of being human, rather than having a corner on one or the other ways. And her third point is that the two people in this intimate relationship can navigate separateness and connectedness. They can navigate separateness and connectedness. Now, I can say that, but I also know that's not easy to do. That in a relationship, both people can have their separateness without losing the connection that they have. So she sees the goal of relationships for all of us is that we have relationships with both men and women. I know for me, I have always had girls and women and college female friends. But for me to have male friends has not been as easy. And I was real surprised. I thought that was true for all women. You know how you think when you think it, it's how it is? Well, I was really surprised. I have this good friend. In fact, she's teaching in Norway, where Scott Hasserud was, in Stavanger. And she said, In fact, our relationship has developed as friendship. She came to me one time before she left for Norway, and she said, I want you to know how special this friendship has been. And I wasn't quite sure what she meant until she went on to say, I've only been able to be close friends with men. She's very happily married, and she's never violated that contract, but she still has been able to have friendships with men. It really surprised me. I thought, I didn't know women can do that. It seemed to me more natural to have friendships with women. So the point is that the goal would be that we can have relationships close friendships with both men and women, that we don't lose ourself, that the relationship doesn't take away from ourself, and that we have a self that doesn't take away from the relationship, that one person doesn't negate the relationship that they have together. Okay, let's talk about some other definitions. In The Struggle for Intimacy, Janet Wotus talks about six ingredients for a healthy relationship. She says, I can be me, you can be you, we can be us, and all of those are separate things. I can grow, you can grow, and we can grow together. So that there's not too much I-ness and not too much we-ness. Okay, I'm just throwing these definitions at you, and I'm intending to have a lot of time for you to talk. But just as a starting for our conversations. This is from Beyond Codependency, which is the next book after Codependent No More, which is now sold out in the bookstore. But this came out this spring, and I didn't know about it at the time. It's Beyond Codependency by Melody Beattie. And she says about intimacy, it is a powerful connection. It's a gift, a cherished guest that arrives and departs unexpectedly and on its own schedule. Closeness and intimacy are like happiness. They're difficult to describe. We've either got them or we don't. We know when we've got them, and we know when we don't. Closeness and intimacy happen when and where we least expect them. They can't be manufactured, forced, or bought. Now here's what intimacy and closeness can look like on the outside. It can look like two people sitting down having coffee and talking. Intimacy can look like three people sitting around the dinner table chatting. It can look like two people cooking dinner together or painting a room, two people fishing, one person praying, a couple dancing together, or two people silently holding hands while riding in the car or watching the sunset. These activities aren't necessarily acts of intimacy and closeness, but they can be. So can sex. For closeness to exist, both people have to want it to be that. In other words, you could have all kinds of ideas about deepening a relationship with another person, but the deepening of that relationship won't happen unless the other person, that seems so simple to say, but I think sometimes we forget that. We keep working on getting close to this person and wanting it from the person, and then we realize there's a barrier there that won't ever happen. We need to be present and available for closeness. We have to desire it and be willing to have it. We have to drop pretense and fear and shed games and protective devices. Intimacy and closeness can involve doing something or just being together, but the being is of prime importance. So is wanting to be together. We have to spend time together to accomplish that. For myself, when I think about what intimacy means, I think of myself as a child of maybe four, and thinking of a person who would accept all of what I was at that time, you know, that giddy, silly, playful kind of kid who could be vulnerable, could be sad, could be excited, could be a pest in some ways, and that person will accept all of those parts of me in the relationship over time, not every day, every hour. But if I could trust that little child inside of me with another person, then that's a measure for me of whether I have an intimate relationship with another person. If I feel that I can only show parts of that child, if I can only show the happy, cheerful part of that child, then I don't feel I have as deep a relationship as somebody that I can call up and say, you know, I'm really losing it, and do you have any time for me? And I think about visualizing myself as a child and feeling like I can hand that child over to that person, and they will take care of that child with tenderness and respect. My son gave me kind of an interesting way to look at it. He's in Boston. That's why I have this Boston Pops t-shirt. And he's living with two other guys, and they're all engineers and living in Boston in his old Victorian house. And he put a phrase together that I really liked. He was talking about how these three guys really are doing really well, living together, not really well, they are dreading the part of having to leave and not be together at the end of the summer, because he said, we push each other in helpful ways. What that means is that one of them thought that they should play softball on the team, and so they kind of got the others to do it. And then my son, who likes to rock climb and hike and whatever, has kind of gotten some of the other kids, the other guys, into doing that. So they push each other in helpful ways. And I kind of added to myself also the idea of keeping you from your worst. I have some friends I really appreciate for saying, now, Phyllis, let's go out to breakfast because I want to talk about this. And I really resented what they had to say. It was about buying a house that I ended up not buying. And I found a house I like a whole lot better. And I really appreciate the fact that they recognized some things. They didn't demand it of me, and they didn't give me advice that was inappropriate. They just raised the right questions. And so intimate friends, intimate relationships can also not only push us in the right way, they can also keep us from our worst or from doing things that aren't going to be helpful. One last thought about it, and I'd like to read you a parable. It's called Heaven and Hell. A very old man knew that he was going to die very soon. Before he died, he wanted to know what heaven and hell were like. So he visited the wise man in his village. "Can you please tell me what heaven and hell are like?" he asked the wise man. "Come with me and I will show you," the wise man replied. The two men walked down a long path until they came to a large house. The wise man took the old man inside, and there they found a large dining room with an enormous table covered with every kind of food imaginable. Around the table were many people, all thin and hungry, who were holding 12-foot chopsticks. Every time they tried to feed themselves, the food fell off the chopsticks. The old man said to the wise man, "Surely this must be hell. Will you show me heaven?" The wise man said, "Yes, come with me." The two men left the house and walked farther down the path until they reached another large house. Again, they found a large dining room, and in it a table filled with all kinds of food. The people here were happy and appeared well fed, but they also held 12-foot chopsticks. "How can this be?" said the old man. "These people have 12-foot chopsticks, and yet they're happy and well fed." The wise man replied, "In heaven, the people feed each other." And I think of that as what an intimate relationship does. It nourishes, it feeds us, and it helps us. I'd like some ideas from you. What are your experiences with intimate relationship, or how would you describe it, or give us some examples in terms of defining what it is that we're talking about? Anybody? In your experiences, and either as an experience itself or in more just a vague kind of description? Or what would you like it to be? Yeah.
I like to think about the intimate relationships I've had with other women, or some of them started out when we were girls, and those have lasted over many, many, many years. And though we see each other, some of them only every 10 or 20 years, that intimacy still feels like it's there.
Like when you get together, it isn't like all that time had really happened in between.
Yeah.
Great, I like that example. Anybody else? How have you experienced or would like to experience it?
When you mentioned the different forms of intimacy, I didn't think of it at the time, but it occurred to me there's a spiritual intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
You can experience this with people from your congregation or friends that you shared the faith with over the years.
Because you know that you share something very important, a part and value, a part and part of your life, and that gives you that connection. Anybody else? Don?
The part that either brings out or lets you be somebody that you're not always. I'm thinking about the playful part, the serious part, whatever it is.
Sometimes we kind of focus on being a kind of person, on you know, one set of characteristics, and we kind of let the other kind of characteristics go. And I have a close friend, and she is really playful, and she does help me with that side of myself. You know, she will break the seriousness or my intensity at work when I'm working as a school counselor. Sometimes I'm just, you know, kind of, I really need somebody to just pull the perspective of humor back into my life.
When you see someone, you just have that good feeling inside.
Mm-hmm.
You feel good about yourself as well.
That's a good signal about what that relationship does if you feel good seeing that person. Okay, so let's talk about the way we can visualize what relationships are as well as what they are not. When you have an intimate relationship with another person, it's almost like there are three factors. There's you, there's the other person, and there's the relationship. And what you create together is separate from either of the two of you. And it has to be nurtured and cared for in the same way that each person has to nurture and care for themselves. And of course, time and commitment and energy and interest in that relationship are all a part of creating that third person. I think I talked about this the other day, but I'll repeat it. If two people have a relationship and one person is dependent or addicted on something else, which is stronger than love, then the energy of the person who's addicted is going out here, and the relationship that the two of them create together is not going to be as strong as if this addiction wasn't there. Because there is, you can think of a relationship as like a third person, as a separate entity. It's not one person and it's not the other. It's something that they have together. Let's talk about another kind of thing that intimacy is not. And that looks like this. And it's called fusion. Another word for it is enmeshment. Or dependency on each other in unhealthy ways. What happens is that two people fuse together and they don't remain two separate people. It's like one person climbs into the other person's pocket and doesn't climb back out. They're kind of stuck there. An example of that was I went to a workshop by a really excellent therapist who works with eating disorders. And she was talking about this girl named Marguerite and the enmeshment that Marguerite had with her mother. And the way she described it was, she said, Marguerite's mother called up and she said, "We're sick today. We've taken a bottle of laxatives." Well, who took the laxatives? Marguerite. But her mother had such a feeling of her daughter and she being connected, she didn't even realize it when she used the word "we." They didn't both take the laxatives. It was the anorexic who took the laxatives, but she described it as "we." So in a fusion, in an enmeshed relationship, one person takes on the feelings, sometimes the actions, the responsibility for the other, and it's a very unhealthy way to have a relationship with another person. Another way to describe it is called relationship addiction. And I can give you an example, probably the most extreme one that I've come across. I do counseling with adults going through divorce, and a woman named Barbara was in my group during the winter, and she had to leave her marriage because it was so abusive to her physically and emotionally that she just felt like she could not exist in it any longer, and had a hard struggle with that, and she had 10 children, and she had to do all the work for the children. He was a traveling salesman, and she said every time he came home, all he wanted to do is create babies, but he didn't help with anything. And not only did he not help with all the work, he criticized her. Like, she'd be carrying railroad ties to landscape the backyard, and he'd be sitting in a chair telling her she was doing it wrong. Anyway, she had to leave that relationship. And what happened was he could not emotionally cut himself off. He was a relationship addict. And here's what he did. He followed her everywhere. He borrowed other people's cars so that she wouldn't know, you know, that she wouldn't recognize the car. He came into the house even though there was a restraining order because he had broken down the door and he frightened the kids and he just got violent about the fact that she was divorcing him. But he would come into the house when she was gone, and he'd write little notes. So she'd come into the bathroom to brush her teeth in the morning or something. He maybe had been there at night. And the note said, "I love you." And she'd find them in her dresser drawers. All over the house she'd find these notes. There were twice that he was put in jail for breaking the restraining order. I'm trying to think of what all he did. But the one thing that I thought was, I couldn't believe this one. He found out that she was going to have coffee with a person, go out in the evening and have coffee with a person from their church. So he climbed three stories up on the condo so he could look in the window when he knew they were there. Well, this isn't love. It's an addiction. It's a relationship addiction where he's dependent on her. His feeling of himself was so shaky that without her in his life, he didn't feel he could exist. That's fusion. That's enmeshment. That is not a healthy kind of relationship. So if we're going to have a healthy relationship, what we have to have are boundaries. We have to have a feeling of ourselves as a separate self. And boundaries, you know, you use the term in geography, but when we talk about it in psychological terms, it's invisible, but it's real. And it's a barrier or a line, really, around our bodies, our minds, our emotions, our spirits, and our rights. Now, why is it important to have boundaries in relationships? Well, what happens when you're close to somebody is you have this feeling of being very, very close, but it's not something that can maintain for a long period of time. You have intimate moments where you really are feeling connected with a person, but then you kind of merge in healthy ways, like an energy flow between you, but you can't stay there. It's not the way life is to stay that connected and that intense of a way. So with boundaries, then you can separate back out, and you're safe to have this close connection with somebody, but also feel you're not going to be swallowed up into an enmeshed kind of thing. So boundaries would mean you have a sense of who you are, what's important to you in life, what your values are, what your life's about, and also you're able to say no. If you can't say no to somebody, it's pretty scary because they can take over your life. But you also have to be able to say yes. You have to be able to do that. And that's all what boundaries means. Now, if you have too many boundaries, then it's like a barrier. And like I said before, you may want to have a very close relationship with somebody, but you kind of have the sense you're hitting this wall all the time, that you can't get any closer, that person is not available for anything more close than you already have. So boundaries are important, but you can't have too many of them or too strong of them, and you're not going to get the connection with people. And we'll talk about in a minute what those boundaries are, why we put those up, what the fears are, what happens. Okay, so two people who are both healthy and have a sense of who they are, when they have a close, like a moment of intimacy, it's like the way it's described to me that makes sense is that our borders or our boundaries soften and we let somebody in to our psychological existence. I don't even know, I'm trying to think of an experience that I could describe, but it happens a lot if you're open to it. You're sitting and talking with somebody and you're beginning to share on a deep level your feelings, your fears, your goals for life. Have you all had an experience like that? If you think about it, don't you feel like there was a softness there, a softening, where you kind of let go of your fears, you let go of protecting yourself? And so for that moment, there was an intimacy that happened between you. So we can talk about moments of intimacy, which happen in our life, and then we kind of emerge back out to a normal kind of regular everyday existence. You can't say in this honeymoon blissful state, for example, when you're first married, you can't go through life like that. That's not how life is. So we talk about intimate moments and then intimate relationships. Well, an intimate relationship would be a person that you can have the capability, the possibility of intimate moments. So those are just two different ways to look at it. Okay, so it's a strong energy connection for a time where we merge, we soften, and we get very close to that person. And then we actually are comfortable letting that go for a while and pulling ourselves back in our boundaries, not barriers. But I do want to talk about barriers. What are things that get in the way that cause this kind of a line or wall? And I'm going to let you tell me what they are. What do you think gets in the way for people in this time, 1989? What are things that get in the way with all kinds of intimate relationships or in marriage relationships?
Fears.
Okay. Can you think of what they might be, some of those fears?
Fear of rejection.
Okay, absolutely. Fear of rejection. If I let that little playful, goofy, crazy kid out, so to speak, and to let somebody know that, or to know how confused and absolutely out of it I get sometimes, I'm really afraid that the person will say, well, I like the person who's cheerful and happy, but I don't want anything to do with you when you're really sad or down. Then I feel rejected. So we are afraid that if people really know who we are, they won't like us. Other fears or other barriers that we...
Abandonment.
Okay. If I open up to you and we become really close, then later you're going to let me be. You're going to leave me on the dock, so to speak. And then how am I going to feel? I'm going to feel even worse than if I hadn't let you into my life. And we have abandonment experiences. I don't know, has anybody ever made it through high school, college, and adulthood without feeling like you were dating somebody or had a friendship that you wanted to go on and that you didn't feel abandoned? I don't know. Maybe someplace there's a person that hasn't. I can remember in seventh grade when my best friend Darlene started being best friends with a new girl named Marilyn. I was miserable my whole seventh grade year. And I can really bring back those feelings of she's my best friend since fourth grade. I mean, we just existed to get together and she's important in my life. And all of a sudden, Marilyn took over. And I'm sure everyone's had those kind of abandonment feelings. And so, you know, we go through those scarred times with abandonment, and then the next time we want to get close to somebody, we're a little cautious, we're fearful, because it happens to all of us. Other barriers that get in the way of intimacy?
History.
Okay, can you say what that is?
Well, when you get into a relationship, you always have somewhere where you come from, a history, and knowledge of that might scare someone away.
Okay, if they know all about your past, is that
like
what you're saying?
Like, say if they knew you had a divorce or something else, mm-hmm. they might be afraid to get involved with you.
Okay, and like, almost like they prejudge or are unaccepting of that. Okay, other things, what gets in the way of people being close?
Dedication.
Again?
Dedication to one's career.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to put it down as workaholic, but... you know, it's basically that is the number one relationship that they have in their life is with their work. And so the other person is really on, you know, second on the list. Yeah?
Dedication to other people, maybe. Maybe you feel like you can't be intimate with too many others.
Well, I think that's a reality. What I'm not saying is that you're going to be intimate with everybody you know in your life. There are certain people that it works with, and that intimacy happens between the two of you. But, you know, if you expect everybody to be, you know, you share everything with everybody, that's really unrealistic. But it also can be a barrier if a person isn't focused on, you know, they have so many other friendships, so many other things they're doing. A relationship takes time. It takes tending like a garden. It needs to be nurtured, and if too many other people are around in that person's life, that's a barrier.
How about perfectionism?
Oh, good. I'm glad you brought that up. How can that be a barrier?
Well, nobody's ever quite good enough to let yourself get involved with, I guess, maybe.
Okay. If I get the feeling from you that I have to be perfect to be your friend, I'm going to bag it because I'm never going to be perfect. And there's a critical aspect of perfectionism.
That's it.
And you pick that up. You know, somebody's always trying to tell you, well, your hair looks okay, but, you know, kind of thing. Or, boy, you're sure looking good today, you know, and you think about, well, I wonder how I looked yesterday, and, you know, that kind of, well, why don't you buy your clothes at this store? You know, it closes off my openness, okay?
Another part of that would be expecting something else from the relationship than what's there.
Okay, expectations, or we could also say myths. What about the myth of Cinderella? That Prince Charming that's going to waltz us away?
I think that would be unrealistic expectation.
So the expectations that we have that relationship, for example, if the expectation is this relationship is going to make me happy forever. Or the expectation that I will never ever feel lonely again in my whole life. Because people feel lonely within relationships too. There are lonely moments in
those
all
are
of our
the wrong reasons.
Right, right. So the expectation could actually be a barrier because the person is going to pick up that something's not working right. Other any kind of addictions or dependencies, getting stuck in some kind of a role. Like, have you ever tried to be friends with somebody who's always nice, but kind of phony? Or how about somebody that has a sense of humor that's really cutting? You know, a joking, sarcastic kind of person would not be as available for an intimate relationship because the other person is going to be pushed away by the criticism that's there.
Controlling person.
Right. How would that be a barrier?
Well, because that person always has to determine how things go. And I would say in most cases they don't allow love to be taken in.
Yeah.
They want it on their terms.
So if I went to have a relationship with somebody, you mean I can't decide on every movie and where we're going to go on vacation, what we're going to do, when we're going to stop to buy gas on the trip. I would not be able to control the person in terms of even their own life and how they feel about themselves. Okay. All of those are barriers to true intimacy, and yet those go on in relationships. We all know that. But the possibility of intimacy is diminished or decreased by those kinds of behaviors. How about people who avoid and deny? Why is that a barrier to intimacy? The kind of person who says, I'm never going to fight. I'm just going to walk out the door when I'm angry.
Well, for one thing, if the other person is trying to work through things or come out of denial or something, then they're constantly discouraged from it. Because it's a threat to the person that's in the room.
Okay. You can't really have a close relationship and always agree. It's pretty unrealistic. So instead of dealing with the conflict, working it through, the person walks away, they avoid, they withdraw. And that doesn't give the relationship the chance to work that through and find out what it's like to be the other person, and to both experience the other's point of view and also come up with a way of handling conflict.
It seems like we need to be taught those skills. So
I think we do need to be taught that.
A lot of us have learned those along the way, but some people have never had the chance to learn them.
And a lot of us didn't see it in our parents to learn that. My father decided when he was a teenager, and I didn't know this until about 4 years ago, that he was never going to let his children hear him fight with his wife because he didn't like it when his parents fought. So my parents never fought, so to speak. Yeah. And I didn't know that until I thought back about the times when I could just sense the tension in the air, the car driving, and my dad. One time I brought my two little kids back from Denver on the train to Portland, and we were going to go to the Oregon coast, and my dad was furious because we always leave on time in this family. We were going to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning to go to the beach. And my mom didn't have all the stuff packed. Of course, he didn't help her pack it either. You know, all the beach blankets and the towels and all this stuff. Well, she was really ticked off because he should have filled the car up with gas. So, I was sitting in the back seat thinking, I was like 32 or something. thinking, I wonder if this went on all my life and I didn't know it. But they had prided themselves on the fact that they never fought.
But so stockpiling happens then.
Yeah, yeah, just piles up and piles up.
Manipulation, okay. Isn't that the barrier?
Right, manipulation. Any kind of control that one person has over the other. The one person will either get angry and leave or just give up and not be available, just withdraw emotionally because they can't handle it.
Yeah, big barrier is time, because to develop an intimate relationship, there must be time.
Yeah, we want to talk about that in a little bit, about right now in our society, what are the problems that men and women are having in relating? Or is that news to you, that men and women are having difficulty at this time? And that certainly would be one factor, and that's a reality. That's, I think, a reality that we all have to live with, whereas some of these are things we may not notice that we're putting in the middle of the relationship and aren't realizing that that is keeping us from the intimacy that we want. Another would be anger, sadness, depression, unfinished business with a father or a mother or a past that unconsciously get in the way. I think with expectations, too, another thing that I didn't mention was if you grew up with your father being a certain kind of person and your mother being a certain kind of person, when you marry, you may unconsciously expect your spouse to act in exactly the same ways. Like simple things, like say you never had to do your own laundry and you're a boy and you get married and you never think about what it would mean for your wife if you drop your socks on the floor and don't pick them up. Because you saw your mother always doing that for your father and you assume when you got married that that's what how it's going to be. I mean, simple little things that have to be worked out in terms of expectations. I want to save quite a bit of time, so I'm going to just sort of skip some things I was going to do. I want to talk about the difficulties that we have in our current time, but I also want to include some things about some things that enhance intimacy. Some really general how-tos. I have some good books to suggest for people that want to talk or would be interested in reading in particular about a marriage intimate relationship that I can suggest later. These are in general what you can do with any kind of a close relationship. The first thing, remember we said you have to have a self? You have to bring a self to a relationship. And to bring a self, a viable person, you need to know what are your needs? What do you want in the relationship? And how do you take care of them? How can you ask for them from that person? Say, all you really want with this friendship maybe is a person who's going to go to the ball games with you. I mean, that may be, you know, a commonality that you have. But you need to know how to ask that person to give you that companionship. Seems like a simple thing, but it doesn't always work out so simply. And then this is a thought, to create an environment in which the other knows you care about their needs. Now, you maybe have to say no to somebody's needs. Maybe someone wants you to go to the ball game, and something you can't do because of other commitments, or you don't feel that you're even up to it. But the environment, that relationship, remember that third person, like a third person, that relationship exists in a way that lets you know that each of you care about what your needs are. And that's the creative part that I'll leave up to you to think about, to create that. That's a part of our human capacity to create that kind of a relationship. We can't see it, but it's like we're creating that there. Okay, something else about how to enhance relationships, to deepen them, is to know what you feel. Do you feel angry or do you feel sad? Are you fearful or are you feeling guilty? To be able to identify, it's hard to express your feelings to somebody unless you know what they are. And this is the number one thing that enhances intimacy in my thoughts. You can share your car, you can share a meal, you can share your house, you can share your body and sex, but if you don't share what you feel, you don't get the kind of intimacy that you can have if you share what you feel. It seems really simple, but I think it's a lesson that most of us may not have seen growing up. Sharing what you feel is the essence of beginning and continuing and intimate relationship. And then again, the environment where the other one knows that you care. You're going to be more likely to share your feelings if you know that that person cares about your feelings and you've already had this environment, this relationship that will handle those. Okay, what I'd like to do, rather than to talk any more about some ideas around that kind of thing, is to let you explore. Right now, we're in a time in society where I see it as a transition time, where the roles of what a woman is and how we think about men, how they relate together, all those things, it's like all the rug was pulled out on the way it used to be. And there are people who still are comfortable with the way it used to be, but a lot of people aren't. And particularly with the age span that we have here today, I would like to listen, because I'm interested in hearing what you're thinking about the difficulties right now. How do you see men and women relating in comfortably intimate relationships at this time in history? So I'm going to leave it open, and I'd like to hear from you.
I think now maybe we're more shallow in our feelings. We don't really care what the other person is feeling. We kind of pass over their feelings, and maybe our feelings are shallow too. It doesn't seem like if they're as deep or as knowing. Maybe sometimes we meet people and we don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe time has something to do with it. They're busy, and so.
You think we're all too busy?
And we don't have time to really share. Mm-hmm. We're running and doing things, but we're really not maybe discussing or conversing with each other to get that intimacy. Mm-hmm.
Like when you say, how are you? Does that person asking really care how that person is? Or it's just one of those things you say as you're greeting somebody?
And if somebody started telling you all these things, they would go, oh, I didn't want to even hear this.
Right. Yeah.
I just want to go catch the bus.
Right.
But do you, is that valid that we don't care as much about intimate relationships and we don't care as much about other people's feelings?
Okay. I think we care as much, but I think just what you're saying is true.
Yeah.
When I was home raising my children, I had many intimate relationships with different friends, and those all dissolved as the friends and I went back to work. I think it's impossible without time.
I think that's real valid.
Also that we move so much. You know, we can live here and then move there and then you start all over again. So you have to sort of, it was real, you know, I was having a lot of sort of anxiety about that, and I was in a seminar this summer and it was really beautiful how they put it. They said, go back in your life to all the people. Remember, start now and go all the way back as far as you remember, all the people that you've ever known. You know, you'll have some that you're a part of more relationships, but you have all of those within you. You don't really have to have them all.
In other words, they become a part. They become a part of you. You take every experience of friendship and closeness you've had, then becomes kind of a part of who you are.
You can't really take it with you, just like material things. You can't take it with you. Like in the old days, you just sat there in your farm neighbors, or however, you know, it was more stable. But we still carry it with us in our memory. But there is that problem that we do move, so we develop. We have to learn ways to become intimate right away wherever we go, so we can have those needs met
mm-hmm.
in different relationships. But it's much more transitory. They're not mm-hmm. lasting or long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, is it that matter of time? I think we ask more out of a relationship than we used to ask. I ask more than I used to ask. And so that makes it more complex. And that makes it more time to negotiate. And, you know, do we have it and are we willing to do it?
I'd really agree. I think my grandparents living on the farm during the Depression in Nebraska, if I would be able to have walked in and said, well, tell me about your intimate relationship, they'd go, you know, what are you talking about? You know, I take care of this part of the farm and she does this, and it's a matter of survival and shared tasks. And, of course, I love her. But that, you know, time and attention to the relationship and what they want from each other was probably not even on their minds.
Well, commitment was part of that, still is in lots of ways. There's a fear of commitment, I think, now. But in those relationships where there was where you knew it was going to be forever and it wasn't going to change until one of you died. You know, it was a commitment that was on the part of society, that was an expectation, mm-hmm. and also that you had.
Yeah, it's also something you had to live with, regardless.
Yeah, there really wasn't much choice. Yeah, uh-huh. But I don't think they expected from marriage what we expect from marriage today. I don't think that was even a consideration.
Well, there were a lot of lonely men and lonely women in those days, even though they were married, too.
That's right.
Because they didn't share.
They could exist on in the same house and the familiar routines and be very familiar to each other, but in some way not really know each other, mm-hmm. not know what was going on inside at all.
I think it's so new, that second one you have there, for instance, if you put the line under your, ask to have your need met, it's so new for a woman mm-hmm. to ask to have her need met. And sometimes I think it's threatening to a man. But I think this generation is healthy, very healthy. I think I'm glad that happened. And I think it's hard for men to get used to that. They will. I can see where some of them thought, I always satisfied her need. What could she want? But the idea that she might want something that she didn't.
Or maybe something he wouldn't want her to ask for.
I think our society is going through a lot of change right now, like you mentioned earlier about the roles, defining women's role and man's role and tying it in with that. Just the way women have been brought up in our society to care for others and how much men have been encouraged or boys have been encouraged to develop independent, lives in that. And now, it just seems like this open-mindedness towards the importance of women also developing independence and men also learning how to care for others too. I think there's a transition going on. Yeah.
We've been experiencing that transition in my marriage over the past 10 years. I started out meeting his needs and the family's needs and everything, and finally I woke up one morning and said, wait a minute.
Did I lose myself somewhere?
I have needs that need to be met. But you were talking about when you share what you feel, whatever, that there's a softness there. Well, regardless of whether or not my husband agrees with it or wants it or whatever, just sharing with him, and I've learned to communicate with him. Let's see, how can I put this? But I need to do this for myself. This is important to me to do this. So we get that separate and then one. Oneness, but there, like you said, there's kind of a softness there. Whereas if there's a power struggle, where he's saying, no, you've got to do it this way, or I want you to do it this way, or I'm saying, there's no softness there and there's no intimacy. But when I approach him with, I need this, or I would like to have this, or I feel this, whatever, there's a softness there. And
so the way you communicate it can have a different effect.
And that was something I had to learn, because like she said, we need to re-educate ourselves, because I didn't grow up with a very good home life example, and my first marriage was a disaster, because it was all on his part, it was based on all unrealistic expectations. And then,
what kind of unrealistic ones?
That everything was going to be perfect, and
isn't it?
it didn't really hit me until years later what his expectations were. And we finally got that worked out between us. But I was also taking the role that my mother also played. I was being the dutiful wife and everything, because he told me that he wanted me to stay home and have babies and do this and do that. I couldn't go to school. I couldn't go to work. But yet he dumped me for a career woman. Not being in, and at the time, I didn't realize, well, hey, wait a minute. I didn't take from the relationship what I wanted, where he said, I don't want you to go to work. I should have said, it's important for me to go to work and then go to work, which is what I'm doing in this marriage now.
I think a lot of times that the expectations are unconscious or unspoken, and they're just assumed between a husband and wife at the time of marriage, assuming that things will be a certain way. And without talking about it, you know, it can end up in like you say, a disaster, because neither of them had agreed to it and they hadn't clarified it.
Isn't it the fact, though, that men and women think differently? You know, they have different feelings, perhaps. It's what their developmental, you know, somewhere in their childhood, they develop differently, they develop a different feeling. Like now when my husband's gone, you know, I was writing my reflections one day and I thought, a problem came up, you know. And I thought, now, you know, if he had been the one left behind, how would he have handled it? And I said, you know, almost after 50 years of marriage, I hadn't a clue. I didn't know how. That was never something that we ever discussed. You know, there's this intimacy, but there's not this deep knowing. If you have a quiet person that's maybe a people pleaser, you know, and never wants to aggravate or say something because it might cause friction.
Then it's real hard to know what that person really is feeling or thinking.
And so can you ever have intimacy with a person that doesn't show their feelings? Is that almost an impossibility?
You can have a kind, like it's all a continuum, you know, from different kinds of intimacy or levels of intimacy. But I still maintain that without sharing feelings, you can't have as deep of an intimacy as you can when both people do share their feelings.
It seems to me that in this age we feel terribly fragile, and we feel that our relationships are very fragile, that somehow we're on the verge of breaking, and part of it, I think, is due to the nuclear family. In my lifetime, we never lived near aunts, uncles, relatives, grandparents, and if there is, I think the lack of support beyond the couple can create that feeling of having somehow by yourselves to meet each other's needs, mm-hmm. be somehow total and complete, whereas with the existence of outside support allows you to begin to recognize, as you said at the very beginning, that no one person can meet all of your needs, or can you meet mm-hmm. anyone's needs totally. And that leaves a sense of fragility, mm-hmm. you know, being very fragile.
And with her comment about people moving, even if you would get this support around your relationship so that you're bringing a lot to it, by moving you may have to start over, and I think there's a lot to that.
You know, what I'm hearing is that the source of power for people have shifted. It used to be in the role, husband, wife, mm-hmm. male, female, or in the community, and now the power has shifted to from within. And so it's much more flexible, and you know, you have to have some strength, some ways of doing it on your own. You can't do it just because I'm the wife or mm-hmm. I'm the husband.
So it puts a lot more responsibility on us.
Yeah. That's a hard skill.
Mm-hmm. And like Patty said, I think we need training in that. I don't think we can assume that anybody would have that skill just by the nature of the fact that they're 21 years old or whatever. Well, we're running out of time, and I wanted to just conclude with something that Bernie Zilbergeld has done a lot of talking about, the difficulties with men and women in this time and their relating. And he says, both men and women need to be tolerant, to understand that being good and effective at intimacy is very difficult. Remember that women are terrible at expressing strong feelings, and men are even worse. Remember that the concept of intimacy is new. We're beginners. Women were just the first off the blocks. Maybe understanding how difficult it is will help us to do it together. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.